You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. For the first time since Teddy Roosevelt was president of 46 states in 1908, New Mexico and Arizona were still territories, and Hawaii and Alaska were more than 50 years away from joining the Union, the Chicago Cubs are receiving their championship rings. Who knows if they received rings when they last won the World Series in 1908? The custom of rewarding organizations with mementos has a long and interesting history. Jerry McNeil is a historian of World Championship Awards whose research on such matters dates back to 1854. And also with us, Craig Cole of CNC Awards, who's been a designer and manufacturer of championship rings for more than 35 years. We welcome our Lords of the Rings to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Jerry, I'll start with you. How did you become interested in something like this?
Well, I used to hang out at a coin shop, and I went in one day, and I was looking at a display case, and I see a 1967 World Series ring, and I asked the guy if it was a real World Series ring, and he said, yeah. He took it out and handed it to me, and I knew players got rings for winning world championships, but I'd never seen one before. And I asked the owner of the shop, I said, where did you get this? And he said that a woman had come in and said her husband had worked for the Cardinals in 67, and he had passed away, and she had no children to pass the ring down to, so she decided she wanted to sell it. And I just found that to be a very interesting story. And about a week later, I wasn't interested in buying the ring, but a week later I started thinking about that ring, and I said, I wonder if there's a book on World Series rings. So I started making some calls, and I couldn't find any information on it. And then I called the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown and asked them if they had any idea where I could find a book on World Series ring, and they said no. And so I finally called the Sporting News, talked to a gentleman by the name of Paul McFarland, who was the historian of the Sporting News at that time. And I said, where can I find a book on World Series rings? And he says, there is no such thing. And he was very matter-of-fact about it. And I said, are you sure? And he goes, yeah. He says, you can find articles and stuff about rings, but there's no books. So I thought, I wonder if it'd be possible to get photographs of the rings and then maybe along with stories about the rings. So I started in 1982, and I'm still doing research on the subject.
And Craig, how did you get into the ring business?
Oh, God, I got out of college, and a guy I used to mow his lawn for said, why don't you come up to New York and sort of work underneath me, and I'll mentor you in sales for the Balfour Company. This was back in the late 70s. And so it was really just knowing somebody. I had a little bit of an art background, and I wanted to get into business and sales. So the combination of my love of sports and working for the Balfour Company, which was one of the premier, you know, ring makers for many, many years, over 100 years, kind of just got me started. And one of the first rings I was involved was with the Yankees back in their championship in 1977.
And were you good at mowing lawns?
Probably better at that than I am at selling rings, Ed. I don't know.
Jerry, my premise about 1908 and the Chicago Cubs winning the world championship, did they get rings in 1908?
No, they got a type of stick pin. Let me give you a list real quickly. Some of the awards that I found: military-style medals, stick pins, belt buckles, money clips, tie clips, shotguns, medallions, snuff boxes, fobs, pocket watches, wristwatches, ring, trophy, cigar case, cash award, gold miniature, charm baseball, bracelets, cufflinks, and cigar box are just some of the things that I have been able to find that were given. Now, whether or not all the team members got those things, it could have been something that, like for Frankie Grissetti, asked for shotguns. He has five. He had five World Series shotguns, but the Cubs got a little stick pin type thing.
Mm-hmm. Were there occasions where teams had their choice of awards?
Yeah, the Yankees. Frankie Grissetti was in a total of 23 World Series.
23 World Series?
As
wow.
a player and a coach.
Right.
Once his playing career was over, then he became a coach for the Yankee. Of those 17, they won. I mean, of those 23, they won 17. So he was entitled to 17 awards. And he had a ring, and he told the Yankees, he says, well, I don't want any more rings. He said, I'd like a nice shotgun because I'm a hunter. I like to hunt a lot. And so they said, okay, fine. So it was up to the players. They could ask for a watch or a ring or a shotgun or a snuff box or a trophy. And in Frankie Grissetti's case, he got a lot of – he got a shotgun, he got a trophy. One year he – decided he wanted the money, and in 1936, and it was $100. And I asked him, I said, well, can I ask you what you did with the $100? And he said, yeah, I give it to my wife. She wanted to buy new drapes.
That's great. Craig, how has the business changed since your first encounter with a world championship club, the 1977 Yankees?
Well, it's changed a lot, sort of along the lines of what you guys were just talking about. You know, Yogi Berra has, you know, 10 world championship rings for teams that he was on. I guess probably a bunch of others that he was managing, coaching, and so forth. But he, you know, when he actually put his museum together, they came to me, and we had to make several rings for him to put on display in his museum for that very reason. Is back in some of those championships, he selected like a money clip or another item of some sort, and actually didn't have all the championship rings that he had wanted to put on display, and we made that for them. But the rings have changed considerably over the years. If you hold up a 1977 ring compared to the rings that are being made today, it's almost laughable. It looks like a pinky ring, and the rings have just gotten so large and more valuable and really almost impossible in some cases to wear daily because they've gotten so big. They've almost become like trophies that you put on your shelf or you only wear a couple times during the year because they're just they've gotten big to sort of, I guess, match the egos of the players wanting bigger and more bling.
How competitive is the business now comparison to when you started?
There's about the same amount of companies in the business, but companies have kind of come and go. And in any corporate setting, you know, companies have been bought out by a larger company. And so over the years, the collectors will all know names like Degis and Clust and Balfour, Art Carb. Some of these companies have kind of been bought out by other companies and are now been absorbed. The Tiffany was in the business for a while. They've recently gotten out. But the main companies in the business now, Balfour's still a little bit involved. The Herf Jones and Jostens are probably, Masters of Design are probably the main companies that make rings these days and of that nature.
Jerry, when did rings become the standard for excellence that all those other tchotchkes, if you will, went by the side?
About 1931, there's always been a ring offered. There's been a couple times when the Cardinals, they had a choice of a ring or a watch. But I got a little trivia question for you I'd like to ask. In all my research, I found there's only been one player in the history of the major leagues to play on four different World Series teams. And I'm going to give you the teams and see if you can guess who the player was. He started out playing with the Philadelphia Phillies, and they won the World Series in 1980. He then got traded to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Lonnie Smith.
You're right. Absolutely right.
Yeah.
They won it in 82 for the Cardinals. Then he got traded to the Kansas City Royals, and they won it in 85. And then he got traded to the Atlanta Braves and won it in 92. So there's that old saying, would you rather be lucky or good?
Exactly right. Through the years, as you have both mentioned, they have become the size of paperweights. That's especially so with the NFL, with the Super Bowl rings. Are there different sizes, Craig, that are made for those who want a practical application of the ring to be able to wear it every day?
Yeah, there are. That's one of the developments that's happened in recent years. When we did the Phillies rings back about 7 or 8 years ago when they won the World Series, their owner gave everybody in the organization an option to pick either the player's ring, which was quite large. We called that the A ring. Or the B ring was a smaller version of that, which is what we call like an executive ring that could be worn every day. Still just the same design, just smaller. And then there was a ladies' ring, and then you had a choice of taking a pendant, which was the top of the ring. Well, the funny thing about it is 99% of the people in the organization ordered the player's ring, including the women. So they would actually get this massive ring that in some cases they could wear around their neck, or maybe they could even wear it on their hand. But I think when that's offered, it seems like everybody always wants the big ring. But what's happening more and more now is that we're making almost a second ring because a lot of the executives in the organization want to wear their ring every day. And so we make a smaller version that we call an executive ring, and they might actually have that to wear and then keep the larger championship ring, you know, in a lockbox.
Jerry McNeil is with us. He's a historian of World Championship hardware, and with him, Craig Cole of CNC Awards, who's been a designer and manufacturer of championship rings for 35 years. Jerry, what's been the oddest ring that was ever produced?
The largest ring
the oddest, the weirdest.
Well, let me finish.
Yeah.
The largest ring ever made and the oddest was made for a dog.
Please explain.
1990, the Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Win the world championship.
We know what's coming.
Yeah, and the owner of the team was a lady by the name of Marge Schott. And she had a St. Bernard dog named Shotzi. And she made that dog vice president of the Cincinnati Reds. And when they won the world championship, she said she wanted a ring for the dog. So the Balfour Company, Craig, are you familiar with this?
I sure am. I was doing that at the time.
Okay. And so they had a ring. It was an exact replica of the ring that the players were going to get, and the ring went around the dog's neck. And I've got a photograph of it.
Wow. Craig, well, what do you remember about that?
I just remember it being really strange, and up to that point, we used to talk about the football rings as being the biggest. You know, I remember Refrigerator Perry had a size 22 finger, which is about twice the normal size of a big hand. But we've made some strange ones over the years. We made a ring for the Philly Fanatic that fit his two fingers in his costume. So that was a large one, and just over. I think the actual ring that's been the biggest one so far was the last Marlins ring, which I think has over 300 stones in it, and I believe has got 3 ounces of gold, and is maybe the largest one made to date.
Craig, is the design a collaboration?
It is, Ed. Usually we go in the beginning with some ideas. Like, for instance, with the Cubs, you had a wealth of elements there to work with. You know, Reverse the Curse, the Goat Head, the Flying W, obviously the marquee sign, the Cubs win sign, the wall with the ivy. You go in, and we go in, you typically can start off with designs where we show them our ideas, and then they kind of pick it apart and say, we don't like this, we do like that, can you move that over here, what about this? And it's a back-and-forth process that you usually do with the ownership and a group that they put together that sometimes includes a player or two. But often they leave the players out of it because they want it to be sort of a surprise to them on the day.
And I was going to say, during the process of manufacturing, it really is top secret.
It is. It is, yep. Yep.
Craig Cole and Jerry McNeil, my guests on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Take us back, Jerry, through history. When did the World Series ring become so coveted? Was it always like that, or it seems like in the last 30 years, you just constantly hear players talking about, I want to get that ring, I want to get that ring?
Yeah, there have been 3 years since the 1903, the modern-day World Series as we know it today. There's been 3 years that no rings or no awards were awarded. 1904, the National League refused to play the American League in the World Series because they didn't think that American League was up to dealing with the National League.
Yeah, they weren't worthy.
Right. And 1994, we had the baseball strike. And in 1918, the owners of the team reneged on a promise to give the rings to the winning team. And so when it came time for them to pony up for the rings, the owners refused to do it. So the players went to the commission. Back then they had a three-man commission and said they promised to give us rings. And the commission said, well, did you get it in writing? And they said, no, we didn't. And then they said, well, there isn't anything we can really do about it. So they decided they wanted to put it in the rules of baseball. And it's Rule 34, that the team that wins the World Series will receive a pennant and also an award to be chosen by the Commissioner of Baseball.
After 1918 came the 1919 Black Sox scandal. Did the Cincinnati Reds get rings even though the Black Sox threw the World Series to them?
They got a stick pin.
They got a stick pin.
Yeah.
What has been for you your favorite ring that you've ever seen produced?
Well, I like the 1953 Yankee ring mainly because of what it represents. I mean, all the rings represent a world championship, but on the top of that ring it has the number 5. And that represents 5 world championships in a row. And let me give you a little list here real quick. Yogi Berra, Mickey Mantle, Whitey Ford, Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, and Lou Gehrig were in a total of 65 World Series.
Oh,
of those
goodness.
65 World Series, they won 46 of them.
Wow.
So you stop and say, but this 1953 ring represents 49, 50, 51, 52, and 53, 5 world championships in a row, and that will never happen again.
No,
they also did 4 world championships. The last team to win 3 world championships in a row was the Athletic Oakland.
Right, which I'm going to talk about in just a moment. Craig, do you have a favorite ring?
You know, that one that Gary mentions happens to be one of my favorite. I guess I have a couple others because I had the privilege of designing them. I particularly liked doing the Yankees 96, 98, 99, and 2000 rings. The 96 one being, you know, it had been so long since they'd won. That was a thrill. And the 99 ring was a revolutionary ring that sort of changed the industry, and many teams have copied that ring since, where we actually found a company in Germany, the only company in the world that could laser cut a man-made sapphire in the shape of an NY. And that was set down into the top of the ring with a crest of diamonds set over top of it. So the blue just resonates up around the NY. And from a jewelry, fine jewelry standpoint, that was the first time that was ever done. And then many, many teams after that copied that technique. And it was actually a technique that Joe Torre asked me, couldn't we do it? And we figured out a way to do it. The other thing on your earlier question about why the rings are so coveted, I just wanted to add one thing to that. I think they're so coveted today because back in Frankie Crosetti's day when, you know, $100 meant something a lot to him and he just wanted to get the money because he had a ring or had other rings. Today's players get paid so much money that the ring is something that you can't buy. These millionaires can go out and buy anything. They can buy, any kind of ring that they want. What they cannot buy is a World Series ring. That has to be earned. And I think one of the reasons they're so coveted is because You know, it's something that that you can't purchase. You have to earn it. You have to earn it.
And I think that's a great point, Jerry. You were talking a moment ago. You brought up the Oakland A's, the last team to win three consecutive World Championships. I'd like you to tell the story there about Charlie Finley, who spent a fortune on his first rings in '72 when they beat the Cincinnati Reds. Then they subsequently beat the New York Mets, and then they beat the Los Angeles Dodgers. But things deteriorated after '72.
Yeah, well, what had happened was Finley, when they won in '72, he had a big barbecue and passed out the rings at his ranch, and he made a little speech, and he told the team, he said, if you go out and win me a second world championship in a row, I will make these rings look like rings you find in a Cracker Jack box. So, lo and behold, in '73, they get back into the World Series, and during one of the games, Mike Andrews made some critical errors, and they ended up losing that game. And Finley got so upset about it that he fired Andrews. And, of course, the news media, the other teammates, and the public went ballistic on Finley. And they said, what a jerk. How can you fire a guy for making an error? And the commissioner called Finley up and says, hey, Charlie, you can't fire a guy for making an error. You have to reinstate him. So they end up winning the World Series a second year in a row. So, of course, all the players are thinking, wow, we're going to get better rings than we got the first time, because the first rings were really nice. It had a nice diamond in it. And Finley put a Finleyism on it, and it was S plus S equals S, which was sweat and sacrifice equals success. So they're all waiting to get their rings. But Finley was upset about all the bad things that were said about him for firing Andrews, so he decides, you know, I'm going to give him the cheapest rings in baseball. And he told the company that got the contract to make the rings that he didn't want the rings to cost more than $300 a piece. And the commissioner's office has to pay a certain amount toward the memento, and it was $300 at that time. So Finley didn't have to pay anything for those rings, and then he had them sent by mail to the players, and one of the players he sent the ring to was Catfish Hunter. And when Catfish Hunter saw this ring, he called Finley up on the phone and started cussing him out. And it was one of only two World Series rings that do not have any diamonds in it, and that's the '73 and '74 World Series rings.
Wow. I'm interested in knowing, there have been mistakes on baseball cards, and yet they went into circulation. That has not happened with mementos for championship clubs. Has that ever happened, Craig or Jerry, either of you know?
I don't know of any. I mean, I know that there have been rings that have been counterfeited and things like that, but error on a ring, Craig?
I can tell you one in recent years that's kind of a funny story. When Roger Clemens finally earned his first ring with the Yankees in I believe it was 2000, the list came in with his name on it to make the ring, and we also put the player's number on there as well. And next to his name was the number 33. You may remember that David Wells was on the team prior to that and was traded and sent away and did not want to leave the Yankees when Clemens came. 33 was David Wells' number. 23 was Roger Clemens' number. Nobody caught that error. It was an error by the Yankees, and Roger Clemens' ring was made with a 33 on it. On the ring presentation day, and he was given the ring, it actually raised a little bit of a stir at the time, and Clemens was actually quoted as thinking that maybe it was done intentionally. But I can assure you that it wasn't, and we took that and corrected it. Years later, Boomer Wells approached me and asked me if he could please, you know, buy that ring with 33 on it. And I said, it actually has got Clemens' name on it. And he said, I don't care. I just wanted to be on that team so bad.
Mm. Jerry, in point of fact, Clemens wore 22. And so what happened?
Well, we ended up having to remake it and get him his correct ring.
Okay, so, all right, so you never gave him that ring.
Yeah, the ring was taken back.
Yeah, Ed?
Yeah, Jerry?
one of the most historic rings of all time was the Cardinals' 1926 World Series ring. And the reason for that is, first of all, it was the first World Championship for the Cardinals. But what really made it historic was that Charles Lindbergh presented these rings to the Cardinals in 1927. They get the rings a year later after they winning the World Championship. And there's a picture in a book that I have here, and it shows Grover Cleveland, Pete Alexander, shaking hands with Charles Lindbergh, accepting his World Series ring.
Wow, that is an incredible story. And by extension, worlds collide with Charles Lindbergh in baseball. Jerry, talk about those moments where there have been symbolic messages that have been entered onto the rings because of world events.
Yeah, well, the Arizona Diamondbacks, they had put on the inside of the ring 9/11, never forget. But some of the more unusual things that they put on, like here in St. Louis, well, there's only two rings right now that have national monuments on them. Can you name the two rings that have national monuments on them?
The Arch in St. Louis?
Yes, that's correct.
And I'm going to say the Washington Monument?
No, it's the Liberty Bell.
Oh, of course. Right, so, Philadelphia.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, but the more unusual thing is that the Cardinals had a squirrel put on their ring. It was during the World Series, a squirrel ran across home plate, and they named it the Rally Squirrel. And the Cardinals end up winning the World Series, and they decided they wanted the squirrel put on the ring.
But the Angels didn't go so far with the rally monkey in 2002 when they came back and beat the Giants. Craig, what a story, though, that Arizona, which did not suffer the way New York did in September of 2001, would do that, would have such a symbolic message on their championship rings over the Yankees.
Yeah, it really is. It was a real tribute. And having been in New York and lived through that series, if you recall the dramatic home runs in those games, I think New York was a little bit stunned what happened in the game with the all-time greatest closer Mariano Rivera on the mound. And the Yankee rings leading up to that year, both 99 and 2000, both had the World Trade Centers in the background behind Yankee Stadium in showing the outline of the city. So that's also a poignant part of those rings prior to 9/11.
To Jerry's point a moment ago, in our remaining moments with Craig Cole and Jerry McNeil, Craig, Finley was not the first, I would think, and has not been the last to have different grades of rings. I remember when the Detroit Tigers broke out of the gate 35-5 in 1984 and went wire to wire, never lost a postseason game, and beat this they did lose one game to San Diego Padres in the World Series. But the Detroit Tigers reportedly had different grades of rings, because I can remember this obscure pitcher named Bill Scherer, who was a left-handed reliever, complaining about the quality of his ring.
Yeah, I've heard that one before. Obviously, we haven't done all of them, and there have been some stories in the past about maybe different diamond grades being used. You know, maybe the players got a higher quality, or maybe even the executive group got a higher quality of diamonds. There have been situations where the players or maybe the executive group may get 14-karat gold rings, and they might and the budgets for the team may be lowered and provide 10-karat for other staff members. But it's not uncommon to have basically a ring and maybe a B ring or even a C ring in the organization. The Phillies as well, I didn't even mention this, they gave a ring out to all the day of game staff, the people, the vendors in the stadium. It was, it wasn't the size or solid gold or that the other rings were, But it's not unheard of for them to be different levels of quality. And usually they try to attain the same look.
So, guys, how big are the orders? Jerry, what were they when they first ordered rings? How many would they order? And, Craig, how many are they ordering now? When you consider the fact, as you mentioned, the Phillies were kind enough to give away rings to their game day staff. They give them to their scouts. They give them to their minor league personnel. Jerry, what was it like? And, Craig, take it from there.
Well, what it is, when the Florida Marlins won in 2003, I got a local newspaper from Florida, and in the paper it said that the ownership was going to have 85 rings made, and that's the ring that had 228 diamonds in it. So they ordered 85, but then Boston, they ordered over 300 rings. So they could have as many rings made as they want and give them out to whoever they wanted.
Craig?
Yeah, that pretty much follows it. It's gotten to be more and more. I mean, it's definitely into the hundreds, and they are given to scouts. They are given a lot, often to GMs of minor league teams. Even over the years, you know, Mr. Steinbrenner gave them to certain dignitaries or whatever as a special gift. If it was somebody maybe, like a senator or mayor or whatever. So it has gone up in quantity over the years because they're so cherished and, so well received and even someone who maybe wasn't on the team. But that has some involvement with the team, would really, obviously really cherish it as a gift.
Rudy Giuliani has rings.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, he does. The Yankee mascot.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Mets have Mr. Met. The Yankees have Mr. Giuliani. There's a synchronicity between the two of you that you both love that 1953 Yankees ring, which was the fifth of five consecutive world championships won by Casey Stengel's clubs. And I recall that that was the ring that Yogi Berra wore all the time and Whitey Ford wore all the time. That was their favorite as well. And how lucky it was for them that they were able to choose when you look at a guy like, and he's always the symbol of futility, Ernie Banks, who played all those years, had a World Series career, and never had the opportunity to win a World Series ring.
Yeah, Ted Williams, let's see, I got a list here. Ty Cobb, Ted Williams, Ernie Banks, Juan Marichal, Wayne Wainer, Paul Wainer, Harmon Killebrew, Carl Yastrzemski have never won a world championship ring. But one of the things they do get that all the other players that don't is when you get inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, you get a Hall of Fame ring. And a world record was set in 2014. One of the Hall of Fame ring sold for $259,642. You want to guess whose ring it was?
Who was that?
Satchel Paige.
Wow.
So I've been keeping an ongoing list of some of the rings that have sold at auction. Right now I have a list of 60 rings. Those 60 rings total up to, $5,182,629 for 60 rings. The top 10 rings sold for $1,934,859. If you want the list, I'll do it real quickly. Number 10, Earl Combs, sold $155,000. Number 9, Yogi Berra's 53 rings, sold for $159,000. Mickey Mantle, 62, sold for $164,000. Pat Moran, 1919 Cincinnati Reds, $166,000. Casey Stengel's, 51. New York Yankees, $180,000. Stan Musial's, this is number 5, 2011. Now, Stan Musial wasn't playing in 2011, but he was given a World Series ring when the Cardinals won the World Championship. Mm. Number 4 is Herb Peacock, 1927. New York Yankee, $203,000. Miller Huggins, number 3, is 1927, $204,000. Babe Ruth, 1927 Yankee ring, 250,000, and Satchel Paige's Hall of Fame ring is 259,000. That totaled up to $1,934,859.
Wow, that's amazing work on your part, Jerry. Craig, when you hear about rings that are on the market, what emotion do you have?
Well, I always feel bad because usually when they're on the market, it kind of means that if the person is still alive, they've gotten into some financial difficulty. Or in some cases, they've gotten into a divorce, and the spouse and the divorce attorney have taken it. I've had some experiences over the years where we've actually even tried to, take it off the market and buy it back for the individual. I actually had an old timer that'll remain nameless that his ring had been worn so badly that you couldn't see any of the details on it anymore. And he wanted to have the ring remade and couldn't afford it. So he sent me the ring, and in the envelope, he included gold fillings that had been taken from his teeth to be able to melt down to help offset the cost of making him a new championship ring that he could read the logos and the details on the side. We sent that back to him and as a courtesy, remade his ring. But there's been some stories over the years, and even some of the greats, as Jerry just mentioned, the family will decide at some point that they need money for maybe a grandchild's education. And you can see the amount of money that they go for. It's obviously, I'm sure, very tempting to cash in.
Jerry, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to read you something real quick. For scientists, the ultimate prize is the Nobel. For actors, there are the Oscars and the Emmys. And for journalists, is the Pulitzer. And for professional athletes, the Rings of Champions. The rings represent dreams of men and boys, love, happiness, fun, friendship, and disappointment. There is no greater fraternity than that of the professional athlete, and they are all bound together by one common goal, and that is to wear the sports world's most sought-after symbol of achievement. What has happened to some of the rings is hard to believe. They have been won and lost, bought and sold, smashed, flashed, dropped, hocked, sold, flushed, thrown, swallowed, robbed, given, replaced, worn, counterfeited, traded, altered, and recovered. I've been blessed with many things, acclaims of crowds and nods of kings, a wife of beauty, consummate form, and my children's eyes, their tender hands. My banker smiles when I enter his lair, my barber preens while he cuts my hair. My grocer gives me meat for less, my pastor will to me confess, but of all the things given to me for all the world I'm proud to see, not one can cause my heart to sing like my very own World Series ring.
That is fabulous, and I am so grateful to both of you. Jerry McNeil is a historian of World Championship Awards. Craig Cole of C&C Awards has been a designer and manufacturer of championship rings for more than 35 years. And they hope that the Chicago Cubs enjoy their World Series rings. So that'll do it for Jerry McNeil, Craig Cole, and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.